Our first speaker is Gail Campmeyer. She's recently retired from the Illinois Natural History Survey. She's highly involved with the ESA, several service awards, strategic planning committee, subject editor for JEE, has been a governing board representative for a long time. This year was an honorary ESA member. She has a tag just a mile long there if you look. And she's the Women in Entomology Network organizer and has been a key organizer for the Women in Entomology Breakfast. So we're really happy she's here today to start off the symposium and talk about great women in entomology.
Thanks, Patty. Let's see. Well, I started this thinking about this talk last spring when they asked me to do it, and I figured, okay, I should just go to the internet, ask my friends on Facebook what it is that they think are some of the great women in entomology, and several names came back, and when I found actually my own name among them, I knew that maybe I needed to start something else. And so what really makes someone great? In science, the rewards are really dominated by discovery and innovation in ways that benefit society and are discoverable by means that will persist through time. Those that have had a great impact on our lives, such as a role model or a mentor, also come up in this context, and people who communicate their passion and inspire us are also considered great. Is greatness always recognized? Well, we have tended to recognize many fewer women than men in our society. Only 21 of 247 people that were named as fellows or honored since 1934 have been women. Nearly half of those have been over the last 10 years. There's a wonderful project underway. If you look at the fellows page, and I know Rita is not ready to have this public yet necessarily, but there it was initiated by past President Scott Hutchins to provide biographies of each of the fellows, and this should enhance their discoverability and remembrance into the future. Here's a collage of many of the fellows, most of them in fact. Some of them are in this room. Please congratulate them on their wonderful achievement. Is greatness always recognized? Well, ESA honors greatness in the Founders Memorial Award and Lecture, and out of 54 honorees, only Edith Patch was honored in 1996 by James Slater. In his address, he said that ESA President Manya Stetzel, who is an academic descendant of Patch, should have really been giving this lecture, and she ended up doing the byline for the biography that he published in 2000 in The American Entomologist. Three women, all fellows, Marjorie Hoy, May Barenbaum, and Angela Davis this year, have presented Founders Award lectures, all honoring men. One of the recent awards that ESA now offers is the Nanyao Su Award for Innovation and Creativity in Entomology. Only three people have won this award, no women yet, and the amount of the award is based on the interest on a substantial endowment. The recognition and funds could actually substantially boost careers of awardees and attract students, additional funding, and increase credibility. American Entomology's highest office has only been awarded to four different women. One of the parent organizations, the American Association of American Entomologists, elected Edith Patch in 1930 as their president, their first woman president. After the joining of the two societies in 1953, Dorothy Fair was elected the first president of the American of the Entomological Society of America in 1989. She was followed by Manya Stetzel in 96 and Sharon Quisenberry in 2000, and you will be hearing from Sharon later in the symposium. Only 5% of the elected presidents have been women, and all except Patch were elected fellows subsequent to serving as president. Among the high honors for service to ESA is the one for honorary membership, and it's based on extraordinary service to the society. Four women have won this out of 102 people. Two are past presidents, Dorothy Fair and Sharon Quisenberry. And three were fellows, the two above, and Louise Russell in 1985. The latest was me in 2011. A recent study found that the women are often more often recognized in other societies for their service than their academic achievements. For better or worse, the Entomological Society of America cannot be accused of that. So high ceremony, medals, funding. May Barenboim won what might be arguably akin to a Nobel Prize in earning the 2011 Tyler Prize for Environmental Achievement this year. She's arguably one of the best known entomologists of our time. She's written numerous books that are very popular. She often speaks to packed audiences. She's been a strong department chair, role model, and mentor, originator of the Insect Fear Film Festival, and she had a character in The X-Files named after her, Dr. Bambi Barenboim, entomologist and love interest of Mulder. I mean, you know you've made it. On the more serious side, she's applied the results of her basic research in examining the chemical ecology and genetic basis of insect-plant interactions to agricultural and natural areas of conservation, and she engages both scientists and the public on the hot topics of pollinator decline, honeybee, colony collapse, GMO, cropping, invasive species, and insect conservation. Do awards define greatness? Well, awards are a relatively new phenomenon. Many women have struggled to become admitted to or allowed to present their work in meetings with scientific societies that sprung up in the 19th and 20th centuries. And ultimately, awards are not really the reason that we all got into the sciences, but it certainly helps that such recognition comes along, and it can help lend confidence, which is often sorely lacking, and encourage and retain more women in the field. What do great women have in common? Well, in particular, those women who rose to distinction before the women's movements of the 19th and 20th, or the 20th century, they grew up in very supportive family environments where learning was valued and encouraged. If they married, they were often involved in the work of their husbands and or the education of children, and their work could somehow be justified in the context of acceptable conduct for women of their day. Although certainly most of these successful push these boundaries. They educated children through stories and observations of the natural world, and these were not only accepted roles for women, but they flourished throughout history in this. Women found ways to become leaders and role models within their communities. They were often written to and about by others, and were keen observers, and they became accomplished illustrators of the life around them, both as written word and illustrations, as we traditionally think. These communications are key to uncovering great women of both the past and the present. I wasn't going to talk about Anna Botsford Comstock because she was dealt with in an earlier symposium, but she really embodies all of these qualities. She grew up on a farm, family farm, with a mother who instilled a sense of wonder towards nature. She learned to illustrate the insects for her entomologist husband, John Henry Comstock, who also known as Harry, and was initially an unpaid and then paid assistant to Harry, overseeing his laboratory and writing entomological notes and answering correspondence, which he then checked and signed. But lest you feel that this is the same old story of women being overshadowed by their husbands or male counterparts, theirs was really a true partnership and much more progressive than the times. They planned together. Harry urged her to acquire a more formal education, increasing her skills, and she was subsequently known for her own books and lectures, including the Handbook of Nature Study for Teachers and Parents, which is available for reading in the Biodiversity Heritage Library. This was a $5,000 gamble that was turned out to be an all-time bestseller for Cornell University. They're both fondly remembered as surrogate parents to many Cornell students. Going back the furthest in history is Maria Sibylla Merian. She was born in 1647. Think about it. In this country, that's really old. One of the earliest documented female naturalists, she was a German scientific illustrator. She grew up in a family of engravers. She was a writer. She was one of the first to document the complete life cycle of many European Lepidoptera through careful and patient observations and associations of all stages of these Lepidoptera with their host plants, and also documented the emergence and association of parasitoids with these. She earned notoriety and funds to travel in 1699 at the age of 52 from Amsterdam to Suriname with her daughter. She thought that she was going to repeat what she did in Europe in terms of documenting the European species in Suriname, but found that these were often very high in the canopy and required help from native populations to do. She returned to Amsterdam in 1701 to write and illustrate the metamorphosis of insects of Suriname, and the correspondence and copies of her artwork and have persisted through the centuries, which is really a testament to her impact. Kim Todd wrote a 2007 biography about Marian, and it transports the reader to observe her life and as a really remarkable woman in the context of her time. Marian is recognized in other parts of the world, mainly in Germany. There was a ship that was launched in her name. The $500 Deutschmark note has her picture on it. She was on a stamp. So even after the 1600s, she was noted for her time. Eleanor Ann Ormerod was in the mid-1800s to 1901. She was a British economic entomologist of the Victorian era. She was called the Lady Entomologist by nature after her death, and she had a very strong concern for station as well as gender in the word lady. She took extreme care to justify her work in terms of genteel philanthropy and domestic helpmeet. Her interest in entomology was tolerated, but regarded as kind of a hobby in her family. She contributed insects to the Royal Horticultural Society's exhibits of beneficial and harmful insects, and even won a silver medal in 1870 for this in economic entomology. And she took on the management of the family farm and estate as her father aged, learning from tenant farmers and laborers. This is something, this last is something that you'll see continues throughout her career. At the age of 45, her father had died, and she was free then finally to devote her time to entomology and working from home. From 1877 to 1901, she self-published 22 annual reports of observations of injurious insects. Several of these are also available in the Biodiversity Heritage Library. And she combined there her personal observations with those of others of various social classes. Unlike many of the others writing in her day, she was not the sole. She did not portray herself as the sole scientific authority, but was a mixture of teacher, learner, and facilitator. The tone of her work allowed for multiple solutions to problems with different variables interacting, such as weather, geography, time of year, availability of workers, and so forth. And the reports were very approachable and affordable by her target audience. She was known as a lecturer, but she was very uncomfortable in that role. She was the first woman bestowed an honorary law degree in 1900 from the University of Edinburgh by the dean of faculty, who said, "Her labors have been crowned with such success that she is entitled to be hailed as the protectress of agriculture and fruits of the earth, a beneficent Demeter of the 19th century." Dame Marian Louisa Rothschild was an amazing type of woman as well. Although she lacked a formal education, her list of accomplishments, awards, and honorary degrees proved that curiosity and determination and funding, in her case family funding, can take you far in life. She was educated on the family estate by a governess and her father, and then later a very eccentric uncle who owned a private museum in Tring. and her lifelong appreciation for nature and unswerving promotion of her father's legacy of conservation, which grew into the Royal Society of Wildlife Trusts, has left an enduring stamp on the whole of Britain. You'll note, however, that the Wildlife Trust give no credit to her on their website, and very little to him. During World War II, she worked on cracking the German Enigma code at Bletchley Park, and was awarded a defense medal for her work. But it is her entomological work that we're talking about here, and why she became famous. And she had access to the Rothschild's flea collection that was housed at Tring until its transfer to the British Museum in 1971. She published her first paper on fleas in 1934 and popularized these often despised parasites in 1952 with fleas, flukes, and cuckoos. Again, you can read this on the Biodiversity Heritage or the Biodiversity Heritage Library website. She shifted the blame for vectoring myxomatosis in rabbits from the mosquito to the rabbit flea. Over a period of 30 years, she published her largest scientific treatise in a 6-volume catalog of the Rothschild collection of fleas in the British Museum. She also described the mechanism for flea jumping behavior using high-speed photography, and was the first to link the reproductive cycle of a host, that is in female rabbits here, to the maturity of their parasites or fleas, and the synchrony would ensure the availability of suitable hosts, baby rabbits, into the next generation. The second half of her life, she concentrated on chemical ecology. She studied the selective preying by birds on Lepidoptera species, including mimicry, and was the first to demonstrate that some insects were to sequester vertebrate toxic compounds. This included even the monarch, and showed that the monarch caterpillar, if it had not fed on these, had a silver streak in its chrysalis versus a golden streak. She has a whole list of honors. She opened the doors to women in many previously male bastions, such as the Verrill Supper for Entomologists that she also chaired. She was the first of 2 female presidents of the Royal Entomological Society. She was elected Fellowship of the Royal Society in 1985, and she's part of the only or the first brother-sister duo to be so elected. She was the first member of the exclusive Entomological Club and honorary life member president in 1998. She accrued 8 doctorates, honorary doctorates, and became Dame in 2000. And ESA made her a fellow in 2001, but this is not heralded in any of the other kinds of literature that I found talking about her. So we need to basically make that a little more apparent. This has been merely scratching the surface. There are many, many more great women in entomology to be discovered and chronicled. The most fascinating are those that combine their passion for discovery with the need to communicate these findings and their impact on others in a mixture of scientific and popular communications. What will the future bring? As a traditional correspondence on paper is replaced by emails, Twitter, blogs, and ebooks in the cloud, how persistent and discoverable will these things be into the future? And how will we find and define the great women of the 21st century? I have many additional sources that I'll be putting up on the Women in Entomology Network so that you can see these without going blind, as well as additional reading for women in science. And I'd like to thank Rita and Patty for inviting me to do this. This has been a wonderful way to spend 6 months in preparing for this. I'm so glad I'm retired. Elizabeth Beckmeyer, who began the Women in Entomology Breakfast at the annual meeting and has been a personal source of inspiration, and to those men and women who have always encouraged me to think, do, grow, and change. And of course, there are many, many other women that I haven't had a chance to fet yet, and I hope that in the future we will. Thank you.
Thank you.